Hello, fellow geocachers. Caught at work here. You're listening to GeoTalk.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to PostyGirl06 from South Australia. We find those human travel bugs, Liz and Bruce, up in far north Queensland. And we preview a new geocaching game just for kids. Or listen more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 18 of GeoTalk. It's mid-August and I'm getting excited. Why? Because, well, I've noticed two things. One, the sunrises are happening a lot earlier and the sunsets are happening a lot later, which means the days are getting longer and that means more geocaching time. And the second thing I've noticed just in the last few days, the wattles or the acacia trees are starting to flower and you get that beautiful golden flower out there. And apologies to those who suffer from hay fever. You're probably not looking forward to it, but it signals the end of winter or close to it. So more geocaching time coming up, which is probably good because I'm stuck on the high 700s. And I know it's not about the numbers, but it's always nice to clock off a milestone. And hopefully by the time you're listening to this, I would have passed the 800 mark. Now, one interesting thing that's happening in the next few weeks, and hopefully you're going to hear this before the 28th of August, is there's going to be a total lunar eclipse. Now, those who know me will know that I have a bit of an astronomy interest. Well, okay, it's an obsession. And normally I chase around solar eclipses, but a lunar eclipse is a lot easier to get to, and this one's going to be visible right throughout Australia, parts of East Asia and North America. Now, in UTC time, that's Greenwich Mean Time, mid-eclipse is at 10:30 in the morning on the 28th. So for those of us on the east coast of Australia, that's 8:30 p.m. on the 28th. Now, there's a virtual event, and that's being hosted on the Geocaching Australia website, and you can check that out. That's waypoint GA0773. I'll give you a link in the show notes, and you can log a find on the Geocaching Australia website just by taking a photo of the lunar eclipse, marking where you saw it, and writing a bit of a story about it. Now, this episode of GeoTalk has got some really interesting interviews. The one towards the latter part of the program is probably the most requested that I've had on the geocaching forums, and that is with a pair of geocachers called Liz and Bruce. Now, they've been around for a number of years, geocaching, and you'll hear in the interview that they actually travel around Australia, pretty much no fixed abode. They take their home with them, and you're going to hear that one later. So that's from many requests that I've had from different geocachers around the country. But the one that's going to come up after the trivia question is probably one of my favourite interviews, and that's with PostyGirl06 from South Australia. And it's a really good interview, and have a listen to it, and I think it's a good promo for anyone who wants to go geocaching in South Australia. Well, before we get into that profile, it's time for the GeoTalk trivia question, and this one takes us way down south. Which traditional geocache is the furthest south on the planet? Now, you'll probably guess where, which country or continent it's on, but see if you can guess roughly how many degrees south it is, and also on that continent, how many geocaches are there? The answer to those questions at the end of the podcast. On this episode of GeoTalk, we once again travel to that caching capital of Australia, South Australia, but we're moving a little bit north to the township of Yudunda, and we're joined by Laura, also known as PostyGirl06. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Darren. How are you?
Well, I could do better, but it's cold weather, it's winter, and you got to put up with it. And the rain we're all asking for. Is it raining over your way this winter?
Definitely. This week it's been the coldest I can remember in a long time.
Oh, that's great. Well, it looks like, you know, some parts are starting to get a bit of a drenching. Now, let's get into geocaching. Tell me, first of all, how long have you been geocaching and how did you get into it?
Since November last year, I work with a whole bunch of people who discovered geocaching, and we sort of all cache together now. I think they've been doing it a little bit longer, maybe since about August 2006, but basically I started at the end of last year and have been loving it ever since.
Now, this will probably help answer how you got your name, which is a question I ask everyone, but you mentioned that there's a group of you at work. What do you do?
Well, we all work at the post office and we all enjoy caching. So because of the fact that we're there, we've all sort of tailored what we do and some of our caches around the postal service as well. So I'm Postie Girl because I ride the postie bike and deliver the mail. And we have Matt Mobb, who are both of my bosses, and they're very much into caching, and you know, they have caches that are tailored towards what they do for a living as well. And we also have Ma Bar there, and she has postal, like roadside delivery caches out on the mail run that she does out past Burra Creek Gorge and along those areas in the ranges there. So we've also got CJ Postie, and he is my other boss, who also is the other postie, but he's the part-time cacher, I'll call him.
So who came up with the idea of a group of you from the post office geocaching, and what was the reason behind it?
Well, Mrs. Matt Mobb started off. She actually read about a really good article, I think, in the Adelaide Advertiser, and I think Parrothead was featured in there, and then she picked up another newspaper that said, you know, interesting websites to visit. So she sort of started the ball rolling and was the first person who owned a GPS because she is married to someone who's a fisherman. So that started it off, and then she told me about it, and I got into it, and then the other lady that we work with who does the mail runs, she started, and then now our other postie, he started. So Mrs. Matt Mobb started the ball rolling for all of us.
What do you enjoy most about geocaching?
Oh, everything. I love everything about it. I love the fact that I like all the history side, probably is the most important thing for me. I love the fact that so many times we in life go, we're going to stop there, and you never do. And I love the fact that I've read and learnt so much from roadside monuments and cemeteries and those sorts of things that I think, you know, we need to look at, you know, in our history in Australia. And also I love the friendships and getting out in the countryside and the city, and just, yeah, it's a challenge as well, using the technology. I love that side of it because I love the computer. So I think that it's given me something in life that I can use all the different things that I like as well as skills that I have as well.
You mentioned the getting together. I mean, obviously you've been to one or two events. There was one recently in the region. What is it like meeting up with other geocachers?
Oh, the last event was the best I've ever been to in Mount Gambier for the Geelong weekend. That was the Caves, Craters and Caches yearly event. It was the first one that I've been to, and I know a lot of the people that have been caching a long time were impressed, and as a new cacher who's been doing it for less than a year, I thought it was absolutely fantastic event and great fun. Recommend anyone to go to one.
Now, just between you and me, do you use the bike for geocaching, the little Australia Post scooter?
I've wanted to. I nearly did one day, but I stopped myself. Only because it was so close to town, but I ended up taking my car, but I was really close. But I must admit, I've taken the GPS on the postie bike.
I have to let everyone know, and I'll put a link to your profile page on Geocaching Australia, but you got this cute avatar of a female postie on one of those sort of Australia Post motorcycles, which anyone outside the country has never seen them. Are they 50cc or are they a little bit larger these days?
Oh, no, I'm on the Honda 110. It's pretty
big. They've got a bit more grunt. I suppose you need a bit more grunt out in the country anyway.
I get bitten by too many dogs. I need a little bit more than 50cc.
Okay, tell me about what sort of caches you like. I mean, you mentioned before that you do like those with a bit of history behind them, but, I mean, if there's an ultimate cache or a favourite cache that you've found so far, tell me about it.
Oh, okay, that's a hard one. I think I like probably two main types of caches. My main one obviously is centred around history and maybe finding something that you didn't know about. But I also like the challenge of hikes and walking and that type of thing. And I think to date, my favourite cache would have been over close to Riverton at a place called Peter's Hill. We have a couple of caches set up over there. I think they're from Adelaide caches, and Peter's View is the main one. And we held the post office Christmas sort of wind up there at the end of last year, and all walked up to the top. And I love the challenge of going and getting fit as well. That's what I like about it. It gets you out, and you're having really active exercise when you're caching in that way. So I'd say that the ones where, and I love to go to caches where you can do that for an afternoon with friends and get to the top and have some tea and watch the sun go down. They're great caching experiences, in my opinion.
Of course, you're almost smack in the middle of the Barossa Valley and right near the Clare Valley, anyone who's interested in geocaching in that area, I mean, is a good excuse to mix a bit of caching and a bit of wine tasting. Of course, you wouldn't want to do them both at the same time, I don't think.
No, but definitely. I mean, we've got over 65 caches just within a small area around us now. And Udunda's known as the Valley of Hidden Treasures because it's the birthplace of Colin Tilley. And we have lots of things on offer in the town that, you know, geocaching has helped promote as well, because we've got some interesting hides. And, you know, particularly our post office cache 5374, that's been extremely popular with people. And that's probably the sort of cache that I like to find myself as well, the cache that we've got.
Well, we might put a link to that cache on the webpage as well, so people can check that out. But I think just from a couple of interviews now in the Adelaide region, it sounds like you could fill a whole month of geocaching just in the South Australia region. Final question for you. If you were to give some advice to a newbie, and as you said, you've only started about 6 months ago, so you're fairly new in the game and you're still pretty raw and making, I would presume, making the odd mistake or two, what have you learnt from that period that you would pass on to someone just about to start?
I think, from personal experience, the best advice I could give would be, you know, from the very beginning, it's really good to know the people that have been caching for a long time, like since the very beginning in particular, which I've met a lot of those, and, you know, listen to their advice. But I think for people actually actively out caching, you know, it's more so, I think, that people need to remember it is a game. It's a high-tech, you know, game, but also it is still fun, and it's not all about the numbers. It's about respecting the cache and the cache owners as well. And I suppose there's a lot of people that are new to it who, you know, need to make sure that side of caching is looked after, in particular, you know, places that have cash in and trash out events, and actually looking after the environment around caching. I look at a lot of that side of it as well. So, you know, replace your caches in a respectful way. And if you've, you know, placed your first cache, I mean, or a few, then you're going to learn that not everyone, you know, plays the game the same way as you. So I think if you can help the environment while you're caching, as well as learn something and get fit and make friends and learn about technology, then it's a great thing.
That's some excellent advice, because really geocaching over the last few years that I've been involved, I've really seen it expand to become a lot more of people oriented, with people getting together and meeting, and also that aspect of looking after the environment. I think that's really important as well, and that's something that geocachers have to be mindful of. So I think you've given us some good tips there.
Thanks, Darren. Yeah, I just think it's an important point, and it's something that we really need to address, and if you can do it in a way where you're enjoying something as fun as geocaching and can help the environment along the way, that's something that is really a benefit to the whole game, I think.
Well, listen, on behalf of everyone listening on GeoTalk, thanks very much for joining me, Laura, and all the best with your geocaching.
Cheers, Darren. Thanks for calling.
Hey, geocachers. We just launched another new podcast.
The Caches Roundtable is a monthly show featuring hosts of the geocaching podcast in a roundtable discussion.
You can find the show at cachersroundtable.com or follow the link in the show notes.
We recorded the first episode at Midwest Geobash, but it was just released Thursday, August 2nd.
This episode features Sunny and Sandy of Podcacher, with Firefly03 and I of the Cachermaniacs discussing GeoSense and some of our geocaching picks.
But being our first episode, we didn't have any listener questions to answer. Send us your questions or comments by emailing cachersroundtable@gmail.com or calling 206-333-1206.
Head over to the website at cachersroundtable.com to download or subscribe today.
Okay, it's time to preview a few events that are happening around the country. Now, hopefully you'll be listening to this podcast very soon after it's come out, because there are two happening in the next week. On the 18th of August, there's the Highland Gathering number 2, which is in Harndorth in South Australia. Now, my understanding is that you probably should have RSVP'd by now, but check out the listing. You might be able to get in last minute. Link to that in the show notes. On the 19th of August, there's the Kooree Coffee Cache Camp Conclave. It's quite a mouthful. That's at the in the Noosa hinterland up in Queensland, in southeast Queensland. Check out that event. And, of course, on the 28th of August, I'll be hosting the Red Moon After Sunset caching event. That's a Tuesday night, and that'll be at Sydney Olympic Park in New South Wales. If you can't get along to that one, don't forget there's the virtual event, which is being hosted on Geocaching Australia's website. That's GA0773. And you can also host your own for that one. You might also want to pencil in the next few months. In October, up in northern New South Wales, there's the Cooler Top Weekend. And in November, the Bathurst 24-Hour Endurance Event. And if anyone knows anything about Bathurst, you'll know that that's home of the micros, and there's plenty of caches to be bagged up there. Here's another event preview from Papa Bear Left over in WA.
G'day, it's Ian here, IDS Papa Bear Left from Bear Left in Perth. Have you ever wondered how to automate the preparation of files for your PDA or GPS using GSAC macros? Or how to use online mapping tools to find good spots to find or place caches? Or maybe what sort of terrain to expect when you get there? Or which of our many creeping and slithering creatures you should be particularly wary of? Or how to make waterproof caches and camouflage them effectively? Then you need to come along to the Tips and Tricks event cache, to be held in Victoria Park on the evening of Tuesday, 14th of August. Look for GC14GNW on geocaching.com for details. If you already know a thing or two about any of the above, or anything else of interest to geocachers, get in touch with me and we'll arrange for you to share your experience with the rest of us. It's BYO food, drink and chairs. I'll provide an empty room and a data projector and a laptop with an internet connection for those who want to show off online things. So, come along and meet up with caches, both old-timer and new, and maybe learn a thing or two along the way. Hope to see you there.
Hello, fellow geocachers. Caught at Work here. Just thought I'd give you a heads up on a new caching game designed especially for kids. It's called the Cool Kids Caching Competition and runs through the month of September 2007. If you enjoyed the recent River Deep to Mountain High caching game, but your kids couldn't join in the fun, then this game is just for them. The goal is to find 10 caches that fit various requirements, and you find the caches in and around your area, gaining points based on the size of the cache container that they find. There are 5 prizes on offer to the caches who complete the 10 requirements and have the highest points. But every kid who participates and achieves the 10 requirements will also receive a 55mm hat button. You can find out more about this game at www.cachinggames.com/CKCC.
Hey As I mentioned at the start of the program, the most requested interview that I've had from geocaches in Australia is an interview with Liz and Bruce. Now, Liz and Bruce have been around geocaching since 2001, and more recently, they sold up their home and started travelling around the country geocaching. In this episode, I tracked Liz and Bruce up in far north Queensland in the Atherton Tablelands region and started by asking them how did they both get into geocaching and then what possessed them to sell up and start becoming geocaching nomads. Tell me, first of all, when did you start geocaching?
Okay, we started geocaching in October of 2001.
And who found out about it? Was it yourself or Bruce?
Okay. Well, Bruce bought the GPS, and at the time that he bought the GPS, I thought it was just one of those electronic knick-knack things that probably wouldn't get used very much. And shortly thereafter, he met Alex from Cartographics, and Alex told him about this called geocaching. And we thought, oh, well, it sounds reasonably interesting. So we went out and we tried to find our first cache, but we actually had it set on the wrong setting, not the WTS-84, or wrong datum. So Bruce correct me, wrong datum. And we reset the datum, and then we found our first cache, and after that we're pretty much hooked.
So after a number of years of geocaching in the Adelaide region, you and Bruce decided to sell up and travel around Australia. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, we actually did, like when we first started geocaching, we did caching around Adelaide. But then whenever we got a little bit of a break from our work, we'd take like a 2 weeks leave and we'd go over to, say, Victoria, and we'd do some caching over at Victoria, and we'd think, oh, you know, this was great fun. And so we just, while we were working, we just fitted it in whenever we could. And then when we got closer to making the decision about retiring and that we wanted to go travelling around Australia, it just seemed like it was the perfect fit to incorporate geocaching with our travels. And, that was pretty much it. It was a real motivating factor to get us on the road.
And you basically sold up the house and bought a set of wheels to go travelling, is that right?
Yeah, we took it pretty seriously. I mean, I'd travelled when I was, sort of prior to being married, I'd travelled quite a lot, and it was something that I knew that I enjoyed doing, and Bruce wasn't too hard to convince either. So we decided that we'd get a caravan that was, well, we sort of went through the stage of trying to work out whether we wanted to get a motorhome or a caravan, and because of the geocaching, we decided that the caravan was going to be the better option so that we could unhook it, and then we could just take off in the four-wheel drive. And you know, we knew that the caching would take us to all sorts of locations. So we organised to get a caravan built in Adelaide that was also an off-road type of van that would, you know, we could take on corrugated roads and the like. So once we decided that we had the right set of wheels, the right caravan, we travelled for a year before we put the house on the market, just to make sure that it was going to be something that we could both cope with quite well. And we just found that once we started travelling, we just never wanted to sort of turn around and head back. So then we put the house on the market, and we settled on the house in the September of 2005, and then we started on the trip that we're on now in the October of 2005. And we've pretty much just sort of travelled from Adelaide, Broken Hill, and then through New South Wales, and on the, spent a lot of time on the northern New South Wales coast, and then came up to Queensland in July, end of July. About this time last year was when we first got to Queensland, and we have had a brief spell back in Adelaide when we just flew back and left the caravan and car in Brisbane, and then came back and then sort of started heading north again.
So in that time, that's nearly 2 years, how many kilometres do you estimate you've travelled?
I'll just have to throw this one over to Bruce, I think. Okay, he thinks about 20,000.
That's quite a few kilometres, and you haven't even really done, what, about a quarter of the country, would that be right?
Well, that's correct. Of course, we do a lot of kilometres with our caching, Like even the other day we travelled to a extinct volcano called Mount Fox. And I mean, that was just 75 kilometres in sort of one direction. So it was a 150 kilometre trip to do one cache. So, sometimes we get a bit extreme about it. Other times we use a bit more common sense and think maybe that's not a real, good use of fuel. But so we do travel really long distances to do our caches.
Now, you've become fairly well known around the country because you've bumped into a number of geocaches and they all seem to follow your travels quite vicariously. Tell us a little bit about the travel bug that basically you and Bruce are.
Yeah, well, it was a great idea that was thought of. There was a farewell for us in the October of 05, and one of the teams, Team Canyonero, and I think Team Piggy, might have had some input into the idea, it was an event that Fred held for us, and they presented us with this travel bug, couple of travel bug tags, and so they said, look, you guys, you're the genuine article, are the genuine travel bugs, and I thought, that's pretty cool. And anyway, we weren't really sure about how we were going to use the travel bugs because we wanted it to keep track of where we were going, and also it was a place that people that met us could put comments on there as well. But it wasn't until we started travelling that we realised that once we got to an area where we were likely to meet other people, then we put ourselves into that cache, and then people would have to take us out of that, but then they'd have to put us back in there. But by doing that, it would actually put a pointer on the map. But now often people just use the grab function on the travel bug. But if that happens, I'm pretty sure that it doesn't actually put a mark on the map. So it's nice for us if occasionally we come in and out of a cache, because then it does document that on the map of Australia, and it sort of shows where we've been.
Now, I reckon it's a great idea, and I'm going to include a link from the show notes for your travel bug listing so people can see where you've been and where you're heading to, which actually leads me to the question, where are you now?
Where are we? Well, we are Illawarra, which is on the Atherton Tableland, and it has a reputation, this area, of being the wettest place in Australia. And I think I'd be right, because it's been raining and misty since we arrived. And so we did two rainforest walks in the rain and looked at a couple of gorgeous waterfalls today. We did one of the caches. Actually, it was one of those unfortunate sort of caching expeditions. We'd read the notes on it and it didn't look too promising because there'd been mention of a landslide. Anyway, we thought we'd do it anyway, and we walked in for, I think it was about a 2.2 kilometre in on a fairly slippery little track, and no cache to be found. There was a couple of clues, and there was where we positioned ourselves. We had to position ourselves with our backs to the waterfall and look between two trees, and there was a big pile of dirt there, and I think that it might have been under this landslide. So, not a very successful event.
But the view was worth it.
Ah, it was fantastic. It really was. It was a wonderful waterfall.
Okay, so where are you headed in the next month or so?
Okay, well, we're going to go to Lake Tinaroo from here, and it is about sort of 10 caches to do all around Lake Tinaroo. So we'll do those. Then we're going to do a few more around the Athens and Tableland, and then we're going to head up to Cooktown, and then we're going to come back across to Cairns and meeting my sister there. She's flying from Adelaide to Cairns and going to have a couple of weeks with us there. Then we're going to come back across to Ravenswood and head right across Western Queensland to the Northern Territory, to Thornhill National Park. And then we'll be sort of heading back towards Brisbane, sort of towards the end.
Okay. Well, you've dropped out a little bit, and I know I've taken quite a bit of your time. But, look, thanks very much for your time, and we'll catch up with you hopefully maybe in a month or so and get a bit of an update on what Bruce and you have been up to.
No worries. Thanks for the call.
Well, that's just about it for this episode of GeoTalk. Thanks for joining us once again. First of all, the answers to the GeoTalk trivia question. The most southerly traditional cache on the planet is Chilly Willy at Bird Surface Camp. And if you guessed 80 degrees south, you're spot on. So you can check out that cache. There's actually been one find on it, and it's an interesting story. It looks like the person who found it had to move it because the original place where it was stored was totally dismantled and disbanded. So anyway, you can check out that cache, Chilly Willy at Bird Surface Camp. And just of interest, there are 19 caches in Antarctica. Two of them are Earth caches. Six are the old virtuals, with three of them from memory, or no, two of them located at Australian bases in Antarctica at Davis and Mawson. And there's one webcam, which is at Mawson. And the rest, the other 10, they're all traditionals. In our next episode of GeoTalk, we're going to be speaking to the creator of Earth caching, GeoAware. And we'll also be previewing GeoTalk Video Edition number 6, which shouldn't be too far down the track. Well, until next time, enjoy the warmer weather down south and safe geocaching.